This is the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers. Here's your host, Jessica Cootie, and Husker Radio Network analyst, Jeremiah Searles.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers, another bye week edition. And we welcome in the big dog, Jeremiah Searles. Hey, how was your Halloween? Merry Christmas, you know, all the things before we
start. Don't you dare skip Thanksgiving.
Hey,
you dare skip Thanksgiving.
I'm not. Listen, I was actually going to bring that up because it was the day after Thanksgiving, it was Friday, and there was a station here in Lincoln that was playing Christmas music all day. I could not believe it. I am one that I love Thanksgiving. I do not like to skip over it, but it seems like we're getting more and more to that point where we just go straight to Christmas. All the Christmas decorations are out everywhere.
Yeah, and I have a friend that posted an Instagram of, like, her Christmas tree was already up, and I was like, what are you doing? November is a sacred time for feasting and football. Right, like that's all that's supposed to be in November is football and lots of food all the time. So I don't like skipping over, but the Halloween was great. The kids had a great time. My brother and his girlfriend came. We did Spidey and Friends, and the weather held out. I was worried it was going to rain, but no, we had a great time. We did a lot of candy. I'm still working through some of the Reese's here. I'm almost done with them as we continue on here. But no, it was a good time.
I do have to admit my Christmas tree is up.
No.
Because hear me out. My parents were here over the weekend, and they will not be in Lincoln again before Christmas. My mom always puts up my tree. So she just did it, took care of it herself, because she knew she wasn't going to be back. So it's up, but I have not turned on the lights. My Christmas lights stay up in my window all year long, so I have some argument there. But really, I wouldn't have put it up had it not been for the circumstances of my mom does it every year. This is the only time she's going to be up here.
All right. I'll give you the pass this one time.
Okay.
You get one free pass.
Thanks. Thank you. All right. Well, I guess we've avoided it long enough. Tough one. It's not easy to talk about. I know we don't always enjoy getting on here and dissecting, a loss like that. We had such high hopes that we would be talking about that sixth win going into, this week and the bye week. But and just a tough performance, and I mean, the coaches and players, Coach Rule said it, they've owned it. Just disappointing and frustrating that, they really let an opportunity slip away there.
Yeah, and disappointing is the greatest word I can think to use for it. You know, so much buzz around this game, so much promise coming off the performance that was the Ohio State game. And to come out and put a performance like that in front of your home crowd that you haven't been in front of for almost a month, it was just a disappointing feeling. And it's hard to put your finger on what was the issue, who was to blame. It was a collective. It was a collective of defense not being able to get off the field on third down, offense not being able to sustain drives or even start getting some first downs, and everything just kind of kept boiling up. And then eventually you find yourself in a 20-point hole against a team that's 2-5. And I don't care how good you are against teams, when you get down that many scores, regardless if you're the more talented team or not, it's just really hard to come back from. And we just found ourselves down in a big hole and weren't able to claw ourselves out. And, you know, we saw some fight there at the end from the Huskers against that UCLA team. But you got to give credit to that UCLA team coming in and having a game plan and executing it from the word go and getting the stadium really taken out of it in the first quarter, moving forward there, and then just continue to put their foot on the gas.
Look, this team says it all the time. You just got to do your own job no matter what the circumstances are, and that's part of playing football, no matter what the other side of the ball is doing. But that being said, how tough is it for an offense when you come out, UCLA gets the ball first, then they go on an 8-minute drive, and you're just sitting over there for a long time waiting for your turn?
Yeah, it really can take the wind out of your sails. You know, everyone's so juiced up before the game. The atmosphere, the flyover was sick, and you've got all this juice and pent-up energy, and then the defense goes out there first, and the crowd's on their feet, and you got Nate Rourke with the third, right, just getting after it. And then they just keep converting, and it's every third down's like just a punch in the gut, right? It's like you're up off the bench, ready to go in, and then, oh, they convert, and you go sit back down, and then get first down stop, second down stop. Okay, here we go again. It's third, and then you get back over there, and then they get another one. And it's just, it's deflating, right? Because it's easy to fall into a man of like, man, is this what we're doing today? Right? Are we going to struggle to get off the ball? Oh my gosh, we better get a drive together, right? And then the pressure gets cranked up, right? Then everyone gets a little bit more anxious. Hey, we better get a third. We better get some drives, man. That defense is going to be tired. They just did a big series. They held them right at the end, right? They kept them off the end zone. Yay, defense. Let's go make sure we get on the field and do something good. Three and out. Right. And that is just such a deflating start to a game that I can remember the Huskers having in a while. Right. The right down the field, score, get the ball. Everyone's excited. Three and out. They get the ball again, right down the field, score. And you're just like, man, it's just tough to get back into a rhythm offensively. And then you find yourself down. Right. And so the game plan starts shifting a little bit and you're like, man, there's like the second quarter just started and we're already kind of scrambling a little bit. So it definitely is a mental kind of up and down of how you're feeling, how the start of the game, how the game's going. But I just felt like we were never able to shake the start of that football game. And it kind of just lingered with us the rest of the game.
What do you think the issues were on third downs for the defense in the first half? They settled in, were much better, you know, as the game moved on. But why could they not get off the field there in the first quarter and into the second quarter?
Yeah, I think UCLA had a really good game plan of getting into third and manageables. You know, third and three, third and twos, and they had a couple third and nines. But the more I study this Tony White defense and the more I get more well-versed with it, we're built on getting to the quarterback. Right, this defense is built to have stunts up front and pressures and bidding one-on-one matchups for our linebackers on running backs. And when we can't get to the quarterback, the quick passing game has really hurt us in the last 3 weeks. Right, looking back to Indiana, looking back to some of the success that Ohio State had throwing the football against us, and then looking at what UCLA was able to do with the quick passing game, it really just felt like we were always one step away from it being a sack or a hit, but he was able to get the ball out and find the open receiver and make the right read. And so it's this combination of us not pressuring the quarterback in the proper way and getting home and our DBs having a little too much cushion on the back end. And I don't know if there's a fix to that, right? Because I do think that the identity of Tony White is to be aggressive, is to continue to go and get after the quarterback. So I don't want him to change that because it has been successful. But we do have to switch some things up in the back end of, hey, if we're going to – teams are kind of blueprinting, hey, on third down, they're going to blitz, they're going to stunt, they're going to twist – these 8 to 10 yard in-breaking routes over the middle or these quick outs with a sprinting and a rollout, those are the things that have hurt us. We have to find a way to have answers for those because UCLA exploited those weak points on our defense this last Saturday.
I mean, that being said, there were some adjustments made in the second half because they did do a much better job in the second half.
Yeah, and that's why I don't want Tony White to change, right? I don't want him to change, but we have to be able to adjust before half so that we don't find ourselves in the hole that we did in the second half, right? Like we can go in and adjust in the second half and do all that, but being able to adjust faster and adapt quicker, right? Those are the things that make good teams great, great teams Super Bowl champions or NCAA champions, however you want to do it. And it's also how if you can't adapt quickly, then that's how you become a good team, can be a mediocre team to a bad team, right? Those abilities to adapt and change in game are so important. Right, you have to be able to do it. And, you know, Rule talked about some teams coming off bye weeks and looking at how they can attack us and do those things. That's very true. When you have multiple weeks to prep for a team, you're going to have a great game plan, or you should have a great game plan going into that game going, I know exactly how I want to attack this defense from an offensive perspective. And I felt like UCLA had that of, hey, this is how we want to attack this Nebraska team, and it just took us a little bit too long to adapt and adjust to be able to figure out what they were doing.
Do you feel, though, that the defense did enough, though, to be able to win that football game?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%.
Because, yeah. I mean, we're being pretty hard on them, and they're okay with it because they have a high standard. But that being said, I mean, you feel like for a lot of teams, that performance would have been good enough to win that game.
Yes, and I'm being hard on this defense because I expect a lot out of them. Right, I've come to hold this defense to a very high standard because I've seen what they can be. Right, and once you show me that you can do it on tape, I'm not going to give you a, oh, well, it's okay you didn't do it this week. That's just not how I've been wired to watch football and break down football. Like, the standard is the standard. You are who you put on tape.
Yeah.
And so when I watch what this defense did against Ohio State versus what they did against Indiana, like, I don't care what you did against Indiana. I saw you do it against Ohio State. I'm going to expect that every single time you take the field. Right. And I'm going to let, and I'm going to know it. And I'm going to watch it. And I'm going to analyze it. I'm going to break it down. And when I don't like it, I'm going to talk about it, the issues of which I saw. That all being said, I agree with you, Jess. You hold UCLA to field goals in the first half. You hold UCLA to not being able to be up 21-0 at one point when they go on drives. All that is great. And all that to say that, like, they had the issues, but they were able to do it. Offensively, we just did not help them out at all. And that's a struggling place to be as a defense, right? I saw a stat earlier this week that if their defense has let up more than 14 points, we haven't won a football game. That's a really tough place to be as a defense when you're saying, man, I got to hold a team to 14 in today's era of college football.
Right.
Right. When you're seeing games that are 45-38 and 56-42, like, it's a hard thing to do as a defense to every week be like, 14 points is our threshold, man. But I love that this defense wears that as a badge of honor.
I mean, and the offense also gave up the pick six, too. So, you know, one of those scores was not even on the defense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you had put out a tweet, and I wanted to give you a chance to address it here on the podcast about the crowd. And so I guess as a player, you know, we talked about the long drive. And, I mean, look, I was just at Ohio State, and Nebraska did it at the Shoe, where they took the crowd out of it, you know, and that was a quiet stadium until things got tight and it was a game on the line at the end. So I guess maybe, you know, your perspective, I guess, as a player, when you're on the field and, you know, you lose that momentum, you understand, right, why the crowd maybe might be a little bit silenced and the opponent has taken them out of it. But also, I guess, maybe because now you just have a different view of it now because you had it as a player and now you are a fan. So I guess maybe give us your take on that. And, you know, again, what you hope can maybe change that moving forward.
Yeah. And first of all, I have no ill will towards Colin Miller. Right. Me and Colin had a little bit of a Twitter spat back and forth after a game. He put out a tweet saying that he was disappointed in Huskers fans and how we didn't cheer and that type of thing. And I just responded saying, Colin, you know, as a player, when we would go on the road, the first thing our head coach would tell us is take the crowd out of it. How do you do that? You sustain drives on offense and you stifle them on defense. And it's a hard thing to do. And it's nothing, I'll say this, nothing is more rewarding than doing it as a player, right? And I got to do it in a couple really cool places. I got to remember being able to hear a pin drop in Penn State, right? A pin drop when we knock a game-winning field goal in overtime. Going, oh, hello, you all still here? I can't hear you, right? There's nothing more rewarding than that type of feeling. Vice versa, I have been booed coming off of Memorial Stadium at halftime before. 2011, we go play Ohio State. We're down at half big. And we're getting booed coming off halftime. And it hurt and it stung. But we deserved it. We were playing like dog crap, right? That all to be said, this stadium was full. This stadium was loud. I was in the stadium. We did not sit when the defense was on the field. We stood and we cheered every single play of that 8-minute drive. Every single play of the drive going forward after that. We sat down and we were quiet when the offense was on the field. And there was some groans and there were some grumbles because there was frustration building. And when everything starts to go awry, as a player, you can't let any of that matter. None of that can matter. You have to worry about what's going on the field. But as a fan, I can feel where it's hard to just stand up and cheer for the sake of cheering. Will I always show up? Absolutely. Will I live and die for the Huskers? Obviously. But I can feel it on the other side now of it's just hard for me to stand up and cheer and cheer and cheer and cheer and cheer when there's nothing going on in front of me that's cheer-worthy. Yeah. And I don't blame the fans and I don't blame Husker Nation for being frustrated, right? If the team's disappointed, the fans are disappointed. We all showed up expecting to get our sixth win and go to a bowl game. And when things weren't going well in the first half, it was a tough thing to swallow, right? That being said, should we pride ourselves on being the best fans in the country and being the most supportive? Absolutely. Will we show up every single Saturday? Absolutely. But it was just a frustrating thing to see, you know, Colin to say that and to say a little bit of he was frustrated with Memorial Stadium and the Husker fans, because I was there. They were excited. Everyone was excited. I was excited. But it's just a hard thing to continue that momentum going forward when things aren't going great.
Yeah, understandable. Okay, let's talk about the offense. First of all, at halftime when I had asked Coach Rule about the offense, he had brought up we're not picking up the blitzes. So what did you see in that? Was that on the O-line? Was it on the guys around? Why were the blitzes so hard to pick up?
I don't have a great answer for that, except for the fact that they were cover zero, right? And when I say cover zero, that means they're sending more blitzers. They're sending more blitzers than we have blockers. And from the first third down, they sent cover zero. And I saw it coming off the back end. Like my seats were back above where the old tunnel walk was, which I loved because I can see everything from an end zone point of view. And I was watching it as I was going down, and I'm going, oh, boy, here comes cover zero. And sure enough, they come, and Dylan ends up getting sacked, I believe. And I'm going, okay, that's their plan this week, right? Like, that's coming off the bye. They were like, hey, young quarterback, struggling to get the ball down the field on third down. We're going to come after him. That being said, we have to have answers for that. Whether it's a check in game, whether it's a come to the sideline and say, here's the flavor of the day, here's what we need to get to answer that. It's get to this play, it's check to this protection, it's slide the line this way, throw it out of here. Right? There's answers to cover zero on every team I've ever been on. And it really just felt like we weren't able to get to those answers. And then they started playing the cat and mouse game with Dylan as a young quarterback, and this is going to happen, of showing cover zero, thinking it's cover zero, bailing out into coverage. Mm. And when the defense has the offense on their heels a little bit with a we aren't sure what's happening, if you check, for example, if you check to a cover zero protection where you bring in a tight end or you bring in your line or your running back and put them in the protection scheme, and you check to a cover zero protection and they end up bailing in coverage, well, now it's like a two-man route. And you're going, oh, gosh, it's fully covered, and now I don't really have an answer to go with the ball. Vice versa, if you don't bring them in, and it's a cover zero, you have to get the ball out quickly on a side adjust, on a route conversion, on a lot of stuff that's going to happen to get the ball out quick, or else you're going to get sacked. And we just never got ahead of UCLA's defense. They had us on our heels pretty much from that first third down on of the cat and mouse game of blitz, not blitz, drop, not come. And we just really struggled to have an answer to pick up those type of pressures.
What is the answer to that then?
Yeah, the answer is, you know, preparing for that during the week. And I'm not saying that they didn't, but I do think that coming off the bye, UCLA had a plan. And so, you know, coming into off our bye, we need to have a plan for, hey, if we get those type of things, here's our answers, right? And practicing it during the week so that if Dylan sees it and can recognize it, because he's shown us that he's a good enough mental player, even as a young kid, that he can see and recognize those type of things, that he can reach into his back pocket and come in and check to whatever the check is for cover zero, right? And even if he's wrong initially, we've at least now shown the defense we have corrected this mistake. Right, because UCLA just kept coming, and we just never were able to hit it in the face and hit a big play. Because if you have cover zero, there are big plays to be had. It's one-on-one coverage across the board, and you need to bet on one of your receivers to go win. Every week you see it in the NFL. Someone sends cover zero in the red zone, and Aaron Rodgers and Jared Goff and all these good quarterbacks are checking to a route that's going to say, I'm going to go to my best wide receiver in a one-on-one situation and give him a chance to win. That's how you beat cover zero. And then all five guys, six guys, seven guys that are in the protection being so dialed in and so buttoned up that you are doing your assignment to give Dylan that time to get the ball off.
Fascinating. The running back, this has been another topic that I know I've seen a lot and it's been asked a lot about. The rotating of the running backs, and obviously you've blocked for a lot of great running backs. You've played with a lot of great running backs. Is there something to be made of a running back not being able to get into a rhythm when there is a rotation, or is there benefits to playing the number of running backs that we've seen the Huskers play this year?
Yeah, I don't really think that the rotation of the running back has been the issue with the run game. You'd love to have a guy that's just the guy and you feel confident. I mean, every great NFL running back, like Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Zeke Elliott when he was going, right? Those have been the featured back, Josh Jacobs. We don't have a featured back, but we also don't have a featured scheme. And so when we don't have a featured scheme, you have to have multiple running backs that do multiple different things, because Dante Dowdell does one thing well, Ramir Johnson does another thing well, and so you want to make sure that you're putting guys in the best positions possible to execute said run play, whatever it is, whether it's a wham, a trap, an inside zone, an outside zone, a pitch, right? And so when you have different skill sets like that, you want to make sure you're utilizing and not putting square peg, round hole of, hey, Ramir's better on the perimeter, but we make it a call for Dante Dowdell, right? You want to just continue to rotate guys in there when you don't have that featured back that can do everything. And those backs are hard to find, right? When you find one, you hold on to them, right? I mean, they don't grow on trees. You're not going to find a Josh Jacobs unless you play at Alabama, and then it's Mark Ingram, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, like, right? The list goes on, right? But it's really hard to find just a bell cow type back that you can rely to do every type of run on the playbook.
So you don't make as much of an issue of the rotation of guys as maybe some people might have.
No. I don't think it's a problem. I really don't think it's a problem. The only time I would find it as a problem is if a guy is feeling it and he's the hot hand, right? And he's ripping off runs and hitting the holes, and then all of a sudden you just kind of throw a guy in, and then we stammer in the run game. That's when I think it becomes a problem. But
we haven't seen that though. I feel like when someone's had a hot hand this year, they've gone to him.
That's what I mean. They've continued to go with that. And that's what I'm saying, that they do a nice job. If someone feels like they have the hot hand, they stick with that guy.
Yeah.
Right. But in the last 3 weeks, when we're on this 3-game skid here, I can't remember a moment where I've been like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the dude. Keep feeding him. It's been kind of an all over the map type of thing.
Valentino's, treasured Italian family recipes passed down for generations. Valentino's has become Nebraska's classic Italian tradition and proudly served in Memorial Stadium for over 30 years.
So I guess, I don't know how much you heard of Coach Roll's press conference yesterday, but I was also able to record the TV show with him as well. Maybe a little bit of a different tone from Coach Roll, and very taking responsibility. We're going to look at ourselves. We've got to address some things. What are your thoughts on just how he's gone about approaching, hey, that was a disappointment and it can't happen. We've got to be better.
Yeah, I think he's exactly right. You know, he gave a lot of flowers after the Ohio State game to his players. Rightfully so. They played their balls off. Vice versa, when you don't show up, you can't expect your head coach to just walk up there and say everything's kosher and everything's fine when it's not. 3-game skids, they're not okay, right, in any level of football. And if your coach is going to walk up to the podium and just say everything's fine, we're working, it's the process, we're right there, like, eventually that stuff gets old. And eventually the coaches and the players don't believe it anymore. Rule's right. It's a disappointing. We all have to look ourselves in the mirror, from a coach to a player to everyone that's involved in Husker football, and go, what can I do better to make this team have wins? And that a lot comes down to the 11 guys on the field at the time. You can scheme, you can draw, you can have all the cool stuff and practice hard, but if you don't execute on Saturday, none of that matters. And Rule's right. We have to execute. And he says, you know, if coaches say, hey, my players got to execute, that's throwing players under the bus a little bit. I personally don't think so. I think that's the truth. You have to execute.
You can't protect them forever.
If that's like saying, oh, man, I wrecked my car, but it's because the steering wheel didn't turn when I told it to turn, right? Like, it doesn't – you can't blame – at one point in time, you can't look other places to blame besides going, I didn't make that tackle. I didn't make that block. I didn't pick up that blitz protection. I didn't get open on my 8-yard route. I ran it at 7 or I ran it at 11, and that's why the ball was late. Like, eventually you have to take ownership in the product that you put on film. Because like I said about the defense, you are who you put on film. Same is said about our offense. You are what you put on film, and right now it's not good enough. And everyone in that offensive room, everyone on that offensive field knows it's not good enough. I'd be worried if they thought it was. But the good news is I know they're not, and I know they're going to continue to work. I know they're going to continue to get back on the practice field. I know they're going to continue to show up and fight, because that's who Coach Rule is, and that's what he's implementing for all of these players.
Coach Rule, I thought this is really interesting too, because I feel like we've seen it some inconsistency, and he said that he had a good friend that he trusts said, man, it's got to be frustrating that your team's so inconsistent, and it really struck him because – that's been something that his teams have always been, is consistent. I guess, what do you make of that? Just that maybe it was a little bit of, a wake-up call maybe that, because they haven't been consistent, right? I mean, even, like you said, on the defensive side of the ball, for as good as they've played at times, there's still some ups and downs. And you know, from week to week, it seems like we're talking about maybe some tackling issues or they miss some of the plays. But, you know, to be locked in and consistent week to week, I guess that's a little bit concerning.
The number one confident you can be told, or compliment you can be told as a football player, is you're consistent. You are who you are. You don't rise to the level of your competition. You don't fall to the level of your competition. You don't whine and complain when it's hot. You don't whine and complain when it's cold. You just show up and you are who you are and you do your job. And if you can have a football team full of consistent players, you're going to be a winning football team.
Yeah.
No doubt. No doubt in my mind. If you can show up every day and just be who you are and do things the right way, from the classroom to the weight room to the practice field to the meeting room, and you're just, I don't have to, if I'm your coach, I don't have to worry about, is Jeremiah going to be ready to play today? Am I going to have to cattle prod Jeremiah in the ass to get him going today? Right? If I don't have to worry about that because I can go, he's consistent. He is someone I can rely on week in and week out. You have all those guys on your football team, then the football team's consistent. We have too many guys playing inconsistently across the board. And Rule knows it, and that's why you have inconsistent teams, because the football's the greatest team sport ever, Jess. And I'm getting worked up here. But it's the greatest football, it's the greatest team sport ever, because you can have 10 out of 11 guys doing the exact right thing, being in the exact right spot, and that one guy that's not there can ruin the entire play. And that's what makes great teams great, is 11 guys doing their job on every single play. And because 5 to 6 plays a game, if you're 10 out of 11, that can be a touchdown. That could be a touchdown scored on you. That can be a negative play. That can be a sack. Those can be game-changing plays out of the 90 plays that you play in a game. Those 5 or 6 plays that someone isn't consistent can make the entire difference in the world. And that's where we're at as a Husker football program right now, is it's not 11 guys are being inconsistent. It's one guy here or there, and it's everyone taking their turn being that one guy. And until we can flip the page and turn the corner and be looked at as a consistent football team like an Iowa or a Minnesota, I joke about it all the time, like, oh, Minnesota's on for another 7-5 season, but they're consistently 7-5 because that's who they are. And we need to become that consistent football team if we want to get ourselves back to being above a 500 football team week year in and year out.
Do you enjoy that soapbox?
I'm getting frustrated. You get me worked back up again.
No, I feel like you work through it. That was a good take. I appreciate that. No, it's so true, because it seems like in the conversations that I have with players, a lot of them are saying, yeah, it was just one guy that messed up here or there, but then it results in a really bad play that ends up costing you football games. Because how many times now have they lost one score games where maybe that one play makes all the difference in the world?
100%. It's one play that maybe happened in the first quarter, right? It's not just when the moment's on the line in the fourth quarter. It's an accumulation of those moments. And that's why I said it's such a great team game, because it takes everyone. And not one guy's going to lose you a football game. Not one guy's going to win you a football game. It's the collective of the unit.
Well, a couple more things I wanted to get to with you. Coach Rold said that he was going to be consulting with some people and throughout the next couple of weeks. And again, just trying to look in the mirror, how can we get better? Because, look, there's 3 games left and 3 huge opportunities, and you got to get one more win. There's a report coming out that Dana Holgorsen might be involved. He's been a guy, he's been around. I believe he was here maybe back in the summer. But your thoughts on that? And just to get, you can talk about one of the great offensive minds in college football to be able to come in and be in that room. What will that add to a team here with 3 games left?
Yeah, I hope it adds some life. I hope it adds some hope and some belief and some change, right? Rule's smart enough to know, hey, if we keep doing what we've been doing the last 3 weeks, I don't think anything's going to necessarily change, right? Like, why would I expect something to change, right? It's get used all the time, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for a different result. He knows that we need to win one more game. What we've done in the last 3 weeks is not good enough. We need to change something in the process. And sometimes bringing someone in that's not been engulfed and in the box and in the shadow of what is Husker football since the word go in August, to take a 1,000-eye view and look down and be like, hey, maybe we change this. Maybe we try this. Maybe we look at that. And just bringing a fresh set of eyes and a fresh perspective to it could just be the difference, right? I don't think that bringing him in is going to be like, oh, we're a top 10 offense, right? But we don't need to be a top 10 offense. We need to be an offense that scores, like I said, 24 to 28 points with this defense that we have that's going to try and hold guys under 14. That's a recipe for winning football in the Big Ten. So if we can find a guy that can come in and even just make us a touchdown better per a game, I'm all for it. And I think it's a great idea.
Okay, so besides just that, going into the bye week, what are you hoping that the Huskers do, adjust? What are some of the issues and things that they're working through this week and into next week?
Yeah, the first thing is just continue to get healthy, right? Dylan got dinged in that game. We have some guys that are getting dinged, so getting healthy. But really just getting back to executing base fundamentals, executing the base things from a technical standpoint, individually, from a schematic standpoint, from offense and defensive side of the ball, and really just not trying to reinvent the wheel over the next couple weeks, but just continue to get back to some basics and get back to our bread and butter and knowing what we're doing, and then trying to add in a few wrinkles here and there down the road. But this is not the time to throw the baby out with the bathwater and just be like, new scheme coming inwards, right? Can't do that. That's just a recipe for disaster. So I just want to see us continue to get back to base fundamentals, find a way to get ourselves back in the positive in the turnover margin. I think we were up big, and I think we're back to even. That's a big reason why we've lost three games. We've lost the turnover battle, right? So getting back to taking care of the football, getting the football taken away from the other teams, and just finding ways to get ourselves back on track like we were doing the first half of the season.
All right, you got big plans for the weekend? You had a massive weekend the last bye.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to hang out this weekend. Actually, that's not true. my wife and I are competing in the Josh the Otter Dancing with the Stars benefit.
Oh, yeah. This weekend. Yep. How's dance lessons going?
Yep, they're good. We've been going since August. We're choreographed, we're polishing, and we're trying to learn how to smile and present. And yeah. Right. So it's going to be a lot of fun, but that's going to be on Saturday night. So getting geared up for that. So that should be a really fun time because that's been literally months in the making of practice every single week and getting geared up. And it's been fun to do, but I'm ready for this to be done with and move on with my life.
What kind of dance are you doing?
We're doing a West Coast swing.
Oh, nice.
So we're doing a West Coast swing that, I mean, I volunteered my wife for this. She did not have a say in this. I came home and said, hey, this is what we're doing. So super outside of her comfort zone, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
So were you a face paint guy? Did you wear eye black?
I did not.
I feel like you should wear eye black with your
Do the
sequins.
Eye black there? No, I was never the eye black guy. I sweat too much. Yeah. I wipe my face. I tried doing it one time because I thought it looked cool and I looked like an idiot.
So do you have like a sequiny shirt and stuff?
No, my wife's got me all dressed out. I got some nice black dance pants, I guess. And then I've got like a nice black shirt with a black button down. And then I'm getting my hair cut by guys over at Straight Edge on Friday, get all dapped up. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice. Has she enjoyed it, though, being the process?
I think she has. I think she's enjoyed the practices and the time we've gotten to spend together. I don't think she's going to love Saturday night, but we'll get there.
Hey, though, if somebody wants, because it's for a great cause, right? Tell us about it and where if people wanted to get involved. I was going to buy a ticket, but we've got a men's basketball game, so I can't go. But for people listening in, if they want to get involved, where can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, Josh the Otter is a foundation that is for childhood swimming and to really help prevent childhood drowning. It's one of the number one killers of children across the United States. So you can go buy tickets. You can go donate. The link's in my bio on my Instagram, at jsearle71. So you can go in there and take a peek at it, see if something you would want to do this weekend or, you know, just donate to a great cause. My kids, all three of my kids do swim lessons there. They've been doing it since they were little ones and moving on. And now my kids are turning into little fish. So they do a fantastic job. But yeah, if you want more information on it, just go into my Instagram handle and the link's in my bio.
Because the fundraising is part of the winner.
It's part of it.
Like
yep,
if so, you win, it's part so of it. It's not just not, the dancing.
It's not just the jazz hands, right? You got to raise some money too.
Awesome. Well, we cannot wait. We'll have to talk about this next time on the podcast.
I will get a video sent out, I promise.
Oh, cannot wait. And then next time we'll be back too. We'll be previewing the matchup with the USC Trojans, also struggling, also got some pressure going on in that program.
No
so should be fun, but cannot wait to hear how the dancing went. Good luck.
Thank you.
Break a leg.
Yeah, all the things.
This has been the Sideline Slice presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers.
Go Big Red.
Valentino's, a slice of home you just can't get anywhere else. What started with a treasured family recipe has become a Nebraska tradition for over 65 years. Proud to be the official pizza of the Huskers.